This is Papa Hale speaking, and you are listening to a Wrestling with Words podcast. Visit us at WrestlingWithWords.com and follow us on Twitter at WrestleWords. If you don't, you are not Papa Hale's approved. But remember to always be fired up!
Ladies and gentlemen, here we are, this week's Fans of Wrestling Radio show on the Wrestling with Words Audio Network. I am your host, second week in a row, Danny Danger, along with my co-host, Scream Queen Tamika. Our friend, the Yellow Man Patrick Alvarez, will not be joining us. He's suffering a severe bout of tuberculosis. Actually, it's just the common cold. I'm just kind of joking. So the Scream Queen and I this week, you know, how we like it. So, how are you doing this week, Tamika?
I am clearly not suffering as badly as Patrick. I thought his tuberculosis was something a little more serious, like MRSA. Oh, wait, no.
MRSA.
We won't go there. But, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, that's the thing. You think MRSA is really serious, and it turns out it's not as serious as you thought it was.
Well, you know, he's not from here, so his country may not have the correct medications to combat.
That's true. And, you know, inoculations, you know, when you're a child, those kind of things. It could be polio. We don't really know. I mean, it's going to make him even shorter than he already is. That's a shame.
Well, at least he can't lose another ear. At least we hope not.
That's true. I mean, if he did, then Lord help us. I think you're coming off a little bit of a cold yourself. I think it's that time of year when change and such, and you know, eclipses and in Georgia here apparently took its toll on the world. Hopefully you didn't look into the sun for too long.
I was working on my tan at the time, and I was not quite expecting the whole darkness thing to overcome the world, so it was a little disconcerting, but I looked up, and you know, I'm still here to tell the tale. I didn't go blind, and no extra hair grew on my palm, so it's a good thing.
That's good. So here we are now, middle of the week, coming off, you know, I guess at this point, it's the second biggest weekend in the WWE calendar, you know, not just because of SummerSlam, but because they have the four shows lined up in the same venue there in Brooklyn. NXT, the SummerSlam, then you had Raw, and then you had SmackDown, four nights in the same venue. I don't know if this is going to be a tradition every time they go to Brooklyn, or they're going to kind of maybe do this on repeat with SummerSlam weekend, where they kind of loop everything together like that. I don't know. It seems to be working for them. You know, the crowd, they fill out the arena all four nights. You know, they like to do call-ups and roster changes and those kind of things. So we have, you know, I mean, so that was some of the big stuff coming out of this, is not only people going, you know, some call-ups, some switches, but injuries as well. I mean, you know, we had Cass injure himself on Monday. He and Enzo's match, he pretty much just dropped. Apparently was torn ACL.
Torn ACL. I thought it was just severe lack of talent, but apparently he is physically hurt. So torn ACL, and kind of throwback to the SummerSlam thing about them being in Brooklyn. They're going to do it again next year. SummerSlam has steadily moved up in the WWE calendar to indeed be a mini Mania. They sell packages, travel packages with hotel deals, with tickets. They understand that if they can get an arena, a city to take over, no pun intended, for that week of shows and events, that it is going to be a well-traveled and well-received show. So SummerSlam has always been the biggest party of the summer. WWE is cashing in and making Brooklyn once again their bitch for 2018. And I am actually considering going, because it's such an electric crowd and atmosphere. And I have not been to a SummerSlam extravaganza of this nature. So I think it'd be worth checking out next year, since I know exactly where they're going to be, why the hell not just go and do SummerSlam week and see if it lives up to the Mania hype?
Well, so okay, so if it's going to become this mini Mania kind, in a sense, you know, it's going to be, they're extending it out over several events now. Do you think that either this year or next year, maybe that that you'll kind of start to have the indie companies doing what they do around Mania Week, you know, where they realize there's a bunch of people in there for kind of multiple days of wrestling, so, you know, Ring of Honor will come in and do a show, and, you know, Evolve will do shows, and several other indies will kind of follow. Do you think that it's going to that direction?
I don't think that WWE has left enough on the table, so to speak, because they have Takeover happening on that Saturday, the pay-per-view Sunday. Monday and Tuesday are Raw and SmackDown, respectively. An indie show would literally have to run on a Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
Well, that's what they do on Mania Week, though.
Well, yes, they do, but I don't know if they can get away with it.
Or something.
Right, a quick matinee. It's possible, but I don't think that anybody's going to try it just because I don't think they have the stones to try. I don't think they have the stones to try it, and that they don't think they can pull it off.
So maybe we're a few years out from that, possibly, is what they're saying.
Yes. Pretty much.
Once more of these packages start selling, once it becomes even more of a destination type getaway. I mean, it does seem to work conveniently for a lot of people. It's right before, you know, the school year really gets going, right before the kids got to go back to school or colleges start again. You know, it's kind of some of the last few weeks of good weather a lot of places before you got to start kind of hunkering down into the fall. Be interesting to see if we do get, you know, what is now Wrestling Week, if we get, you know, Wrestling Week early, you know, spring edition and Wrestling Week summer or fall edition. I mean, I guess probably 10 years ago, nobody thought that you would have other wrestling shows running opposite WrestleMania, or the same week at least, within that same weekend. Oh no, that's crazy. You know, people don't want to see anything other than WWE. That's what they're there to see. Now, as we know personally, you know, a lot of us go for all the indie stuff because they book their biggest shows of the year there too. They bring in talent that they wouldn't normally have, international talent. You know, they stack the deck. So a lot of people go there and then don't go to the WWE events. They do everything but. So it could be several years to where that ends up being a possibility itself. So you said Cass hurt himself due to lack of talent. I mean, Enzo did that quite some time ago when his face hit the ropes. That was just due to pure lack of talent. He thankfully came over that. You know, every once in a while he has to be put in a cage or something just to chill out. You know, when he's having fits or something.
They put him in timeout. That was timeout in a shark cage.
Yeah, it's time out way the heck up there. That way there's no wall for him to beat on, and he can be as loud as he wants up there yelling and screaming, and nobody has to hear him.
But the fact that he took his clothes off to escape this thing and oiled up, it was the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen, and I've seen some pretty ridiculous things.
Yeah,
I don't want to dwell on it too much. I really don't.
But the thing is, so Cass is a guy that, you know, obviously because of his size and such, they were, you know, it's apparent they were trying to see how high they could take him. You know, could he be a top level guy in you know, in the future? So this kind of derails that. He'll be out 9 months with surgery, you know, rehab and such. And sometimes bigger guys, especially when they have their first big knee surgery and everything, they don't necessarily bounce back as strong as they were before. Hopefully he is able to make a full recovery and see what to do. Now the problem comes with, okay, well, what the heck do you do with Enzo? And that was what everybody was worrying until we saw Tuesday on 205 Live about, now they're apparently going to put him on 205 Live. I guess you need a big personality and a, you know, somebody on 205 Live.
Is that what the, there's a, you know, the rumor that Enzo has heat with boys in the locker room. So perhaps this is a demotion of sorts in some people's eyes by putting him on a show that's, you can't call it an A or B or C show. It's just an hour on the network. So, you know, to kind of bring him down a notch, maybe
maybe
put him in his place.
Maybe because I guess depends on what the heat stems from. The heat stems from him thinking he's bigger, you know, like he's getting a big head, like he thinks he's a bigger star than he is and all that. Well, then they say, okay, we'll put you on this show. We'll see how big a star you are when you don't have when you don't have everybody else supporting you, when you become one of the potentially the biggest stars on that little section and block. The only problem is it now makes, you know, some people probably see that as a positive, 205 Live. I think most of the fans of 205 Live see that as a negative. They like 205 Live for what it is. You know, Enzo doesn't wrestle that style. He's just going to be there as personality, basically. You know, and kind of taking some kind of crazy looking bumps that make him look like he almost dies. And the big concern that I was, you know, that it dawns on me that Enzo's now on 205 Live and Kalisto's not. One of the, you know, at one time, Kalisto was seen as, you know, one of the greatest high flyers in the United States. You know, and then he was part of the Lucha Dragons. And he says, okay, well, you know, the Lucha Dragons are just there to hold him until they push Kalisto and push him to the moon. And then 205 Live came out and they were like, oh, the Cruiserweights are going to be on Raw and Kalisto's on SmackDown. And everybody's like, what? Why is he so far from everybody else? And he still isn't on there. So I feel bad for Kalisto. I think he could shine. I think, you know, what else? He's just kind of floating around by himself, not really doing much outside of that.
It's, again, remember the WWE does characters. Yeah. Enzo, for all of his faults or lack of wrestling skills,
he's a wild character. Persona.
Kalisto is a great wrestler. He's a great high flyer. No persona. There is nothing but a masked man. And we are out of the age of just cartoon character-y gimmicks where that would be over. What did they do with him?
Isn't Enzo kind of a cartoony character?
He's an adult cartoon character.
So he'd be like on Family Guy, where Kalisto would be on like Teen Titans or something. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Not even Teen Titans. Don't give him that much credit. He'd be on, like, I don't know, Hey Arnold or something. You know,
Kalisto would be on Hey Arnold?
Yeah, I think so. He would be on Hey Arnold. I don't know. He'd be on Sesame.
With Football Head and Gerald with his hair bigger than half his body.
Exactly. So basically, he needs a personality, and you don't have that many luchadors, mass luchadors with personality, because it's hard to get on a mic without a facial expression and convey such passions. Yeah. And that's where they lose, or he gets lost in the WWE shuffle. They're not ready for the WWE short attention span audience is not ready to accept somebody who they can't see their face and hear them cut crazy promos and crazy eyes like a Enzo.
Like an Enzo, yeah, who that's pretty much his whole thing. And that's why I don't want to get too much in Enzo and Cass here, but I was kind of shocked when they split them up. I thought that if anything, they would just kind of turn Enzo into Cass's manager. You know, that way Cass doesn't really have to do much talking. He could, you know, he could play to his strength and Enzo can play to his. But, you know, and I guess, heck, if, you know, after 9 months, that could be a plan. Sometimes they like to, when somebody's gone, kind of hold off on a story and then wait till, you know, like, throw them back in together, as they're seeming to do with Ciampa and Gargano. You know, like, they're still kind of making allusions and plays to this breakup, as opposed to just trying to hope forget about it until Ciampa comes back. You know, so it seems that once Ciampa does come back, they're throwing him right there into that feud. So they could play with Cass and Enzo the same way, either just, you know, pretend like none of their bad blood happened and throw them right back together and be happy friends again, or they could have them start fighting right away. I guess it could go either way. So apart from that kind of show jumping, we had John Cena, you know, as the free agent, hopping around, doing his John Cena stuff. I guess being a free agent's a pretty sweet gig if you can get it. Pick and choose where you want to be and versus who.
It's absolutely ridiculous that they did this draft and everybody got drafted and it was separate brands and you were going for Raw's going to be SmackDown and these were established brands. You did a couple trades, but John Cena doesn't have to answer to any rules. He gets to go where he wants John Cena is going to be on 205 Live next week just because he can. I mean, he's way over the weight limit, but, you know, he took a 205 poop, so he's going to be on the show next week just because. It's ridiculous. I understand Cena is the big money name, the draw. He's the person that is at the forefront of their entertainment division. But let's try to keep the brand separate. And if you're going to have him be wooed by either brand, let them woo him, saying that his SmackDown contract was up and now he's just deciding. He just said, you know, they just gave us some bullcrap free agent and John Cena will be wherever he wants to be next week.
Yeah.
Screw you, WWE.
Next week he may not be there because he'll be filming a show for a while and then he'll come back and he's on Raw and come back, he's on SmackDown. He's slowly phasing more and more into Rock territory. You know, where he's only making sporadic appearances, you know, because his entertainment duties are pulling him elsewhere.
The only reason it's slow is because he's making it slow. He does not want to really hold that comparison to The Rock that he made about, you know, I've gone, you went Hollywood. He keeps showing up because he wants to save face, quote unquote, with, I guess, the fans and maybe some of the boys in the back. But man, Cena, go. I mean, I like you. I like John Cena. I really do. But I'd rather him go and focus on the Hollywood aspect, because that's going to leave a huge space that they're going to have to fill with more talent. People are going to have to step their game up. WWE is going to have to step their game up and put somebody else in that forefront. And with him sticking around, kind of hanging on to his spot, it's not allowable. And that's sad.
Yeah, because guys kind of take the temporary spotlight, but then Big Match John comes back and then they, okay, now you're out of the main event spot because John's back here for 5 weeks, you know, between shootings of whatever. And then, okay, now John's gone again. Oh, yeah, this person, you know, maybe we'll try you back up at the main event status again. Maybe we won't. I guess hopefully that they can plan better when he comes and goes instead of just, oh, he's not going to be here for a while. Quick, throw some crap together. You know, oh, okay, he's back. Deprioritize this and push this down, you know, so we can make room for Big Match John. It just, like you said, it seems kind of unfair to some of the other guys.
It's extremely unfair to the other guys. It's extremely unfair to the locker room. It's extremely unfair to the fans because, you know, the WWE is this huge juggernaut and they have literally swallowed up so much talent that they're not showcasing on a regular basis because they keep going back to old reliable and old faithful. They don't have any competition that they need to bring out this big gun every time that they feel or he wants to come back. They need to just continue to roll forward and create new stars or stars in their own image and let John go and, again, be The Rock. I mean, John should be on Showtime doing, you know, instead of ballers like The Rock, he can do, I don't know, shot callers or something. Whatever.
Thugonomics, just go. You know, he could... He can do a show on the Science Channel kind of giving introductory classes into thugonomics for those who are interested. I did actually have a friend tell me that certain colleges are teaching hip-hop classes and not, you know, more about the diverse culture of hip-hop, not just the music genre. So maybe John Cena could get in on that and kind of just teach thugonomics, you know, at least maybe... You know, I mean, online lectures or something. You just kind of record those and send them in. I think his wealth of knowledge, you know, of his many years of earning that doctorate could be put to good use back into the community.
Don't forget, he is a chain gang soldier, so of course
that was for life too, right? Wasn't that? It was a chain gang soldier for life, and
absolutely
the word life, and we do know that Bull Buchanan lives in the area, so. Whenever John Cena needs to rap and then you hand it off to B Squared for the booyah, you know, like he's available. I mean, he's obviously not doing a whole lot these days. So continuing on with things about Raw, it seems that the big program heading to No Mercy is going to be Behemoth as we get Braun versus Brock. And I guess they basically just took the four-way and divided it into two individuals. It looks like we may just get, you know, the Samoans going against each other, and and the big white guys going against each other, I guess, you know? The big pasty guys and the Samoans going against each other, you know?
Sir, you didn't have to break it down as such. We're in a very delicate time here. But you're correct. I mean,
the vanilla gorilla, you know, and Brock Lesnar and the lumberjack in Braun Strowman.
He's a country strong like Mickey James. Exactly. Yeah. He has it on his arm.
Hard cold country, like all that stuff. Yeah.
I want him to sing that song now. That would be just amazing.
I'm not through with you yet. We're back with Hard Cold Country.
But yeah, this is the match that we should have got. Braun versus Brock. Monster versus the Beast.
Yeah.
These are matches that the crowd was built up to before Braun got injured. This is what something that was everybody was anticipating. It was just on the brink, and then Braun went out with an injury, you know, thanks to Roman. Now Roman has to pay the Samoan Piper in Samoa Joe.
The only Samoan not related to The Rock in the history of Samoans. Yeah.
Amazingly so, he is not one of the Anoa'i Samoans. So congratulations on that, which means he actually can wrestle. Ooh, did I say that? Anyway, we're going to see...
He can cut a promo and wrestle, which is amazing.
It's like walking and chewing gum. It's things that some people can do, other people cannot do.
That's it.
But I'm looking forward to seeing Joe versus Roman. Not for any other reason is I want to see maybe Joe stiff Roman a couple times and just really, you know, welcome him fully and indoctrinate him into this pain club and this real wrestling club. You know, I think so far Roman has gotten off pretty easy via his opponents have not been as skilled or well traveled as Samoa Joe. Joe's been around the world. He's been a champion many places. He really, I don't think, doesn't care to kind of baby and coddle.
Joe's one of the guys who helped popularize strong style in the United States. You know, in the early 2000s, you know, Joe was one of those guys because he had been to Japan. And he, you know, he kind of made a little bit of a mark in Japan and brought that style back to the States. And, you know, he and Loki and, you know, to some extent, some of the other guys, Brian Danielson and, yeah, I mean, there were quite a few of these guys were traveling back and forth and stuff. But those are some of the guys who, you know, partially thanks to Ring of Honor breaking in at that time and then their success in TNA, those are some of the guys who helped bring this strong style kind of into America, you know? So I think, yeah, maybe, I mean, Joe did kind of split the lip of AJ Styles and TNA with some strikes. Like he had, I think that's why AJ's had the scar there and he has the beard. It's because he's hiding this. He had to have a few good stitches in there from Joe just like actually busted the skin up. He didn't like bust his lip, he ripped it. So maybe he can tater Roman a couple times, start laying him with some hard chops, see what the kid's made of, you know, as they say, you know. Send one of the hard-hitting vets out there, you know, see what the kid's made of.
And again, it's not that we want to see Roman get his butt kicked, but it is one of those kind of, I think, rites of passage. If you're going to be the proverbial man, quote-unquote, you need to be able to take an ass-whooping. And who better than to give you Samoa Joe?
That's true. Because we know he can go light, and we know he can go rough. And I mean, yet again, I would like to see Roman be able to step up to and match that. You know, I think that would be good for him. As I think a strong showing in a feud with Joe could help him start to win over some of his people who still kind of doubt him a lot. You know, the Roman haters if he goes in there and holds his own against Joe and looks like he's giving it back to him instead of just being a punching bag or a complaint, you know, word gets out of somebody complaining, oh, he's going too hard on Roman or Roman, you know, whatever, like things like that. If it sounds like he's toughening up, then maybe some of those supporters will come around.
Yeah, I mean, that would make me buy more into Roman Reigns being shoved down our proverbial throats and in our faces week after week. If I see him, you know, kind of just shutting up and taking it and you know, giving as good as he gets, which would make, again, WWE more, not fun, but more wrestling oriented and more less sports entertainment or entertainment based.
Absolutely. Yes, very much. So it could prove to be good all around. Circling around to the SmackDown side, a couple debuts, a couple shakeups. I'm not sure which debut was more surprising, be it the glorious debut of Bobby Roode or the return debut of Shelton Benjamin. I think people were hoping that Bobby would come back, and I think people had forgotten about Shelton Benjamin. Now, whether they're as excited about Shelton as they are for Bobby, that's probably no comparison. But I think as far as shocking, everybody was like, holy crap, and they're teaming with Gable. Like, after Gable having a team with the generic copy for so long, now he gets the original Shelton Benjamin.
Wow.
You know, I mean, that's kind of what they were. They were, you know, I mean, they were Team Angle, except Chad Gable was 10 times more personable and a better wrestler, at least, than Charlie, because Charlie was very stiff in his movements, where Gable's a bit more fluid. He can, you know, he can do kind of a little more high flying. And now Gable has the original. Now, realistically, Shelton does a lot of cool stuff. My favorite move he does, I don't even know if it's a move that anybody's ripped off of. Like, there's a lot of guys have distinct moves, and some people, they just get left alone. Is what at one time was called the money clip, but it's the dragon whip. It's where he goes, and it's basically the backwards around enziguri. You know, that he throws up his foot, and they catch it, and instead of, like, throwing it down, you know, and then he spins into an enziguri, he comes around and spins with a heel kick. That's a move that I've always loved. He hits so smooth and just quick, and it looked impactful. But I don't think it's one that gets stolen a lot. You know, where other guys do a move that's cool and gets over, and then 10,000 guys are doing it next week.
It speaks for just not only the athleticism, Shelton Benjamin, but kind of not the inventiveness, but for him to bring something like that, and for, like you said, nobody else to take it. Shelton Benjamin, extremely underrated, I think, while he was with the WWE the first time. And unfortunately, I think he's going to be just as underrated this time as well. While he's teaming with Gable, who is a great personality, where his former partner was not as personable, I think that this Team Angle 3.0 is not going to get over. The rumor was, because Shelton has been signed for a while, he is coming back off an injury. The rumor was that he was going to come back and team with both Jordan and Gable, or kind of be in a mentor.
So make it like a third
sort of role.
Okay.
Right. So to be the angle to these two's, you know, Team Angle. But now with the Jordan being, you know, the bastard child of Kurt Angle, that kind of threw a monkey wrench in it, and Shelton's healthy again. So they bring him back and they throw this curveball at us.
Yeah.
I wanted to see Shelton right away on that SmackDown, but for us to wait to see how these two mesh and team up, they're teasing a little bit that Gable's a little, you know, he's a little gun happy. He's like, okay, we'll do it. We'll see you next week. While Shelton's the calm veteran. So it'll be interesting to see their dynamic and see how they have that play out. But again, people were more excited about Bobby Roode. People knew about Bobby Roode. I saw a sign in the crowd that says, you know, make SmackDown glorious
or whatever. Yeah.
Right. Roode had been seen going into the Barclays Center on Tuesday, where Shelton Benjamin, it's going to sound bad, but, you know, just some random black guy. Nobody knew who he was. He blended in. He didn't have the gold standard Shelton Benjamin hairstyle going. So he literally just kind of walked in and joined the club or joined the crowd, and nobody was the wiser. So I think Roode's was more exciting. I'm hoping that Benjamin has a nice impact along the way as well.
With Benjamin, the thing that seemed to hold him back, his main go around was his personality. You know, that was his big thing. They would always play up his spectacular athleticism, similar to how they did Kofi Kingston there for many years. You know, he was exciting. He'd make other guys look good. He would do spectacular moves at, you know, Money in the Bank ladder matches, those kind of things. But it seemed like they never really gave him a sustained singles push, so to speak. Just, I think it was because his personality was kind of flat. And hopefully that's something he's been able to work on into coming back. And maybe that's why they're going to kind of do a little bit of a slower build, maybe help him establish a little bit of a personality, especially for those people who may or may not be as familiar with him from his initial run. I mean, that they did kind of this big slow build to the teaming of American Alpha. You know, Gable kept, you know, Jason Jordan had already been on TV wrestling a lot, and Gable kind of starts coming around here. Who the heck is this guy? And he's trying to get him to, you know, he wants him to team and wants him to be his tag partner. And eventually they do. And it's like this hesitant kind of thing. Jordan doesn't want to play into his ready, willing, and Gable crap and like wear the matching outfits and all this. And eventually, like, he's like, dude, we got something here, like, as far as, you know, wrestling. And we, you know, and so he fully gets into it and becomes, and that's when they start calling American Alpha. So maybe they're going to kind of play a little bit of that here. You know, like you said, Chad Gable's very anxious. Like, dude, let's get it. Let's get it. Let's do it. It's going to be awesome. You know, I love your stuff. We can be great together. And Benjamin's kind of like, let's just, you know, let's chill. We're not getting married just yet. You know, like just chill. Things will happen when they happen, you know?
Hey, you got to date me first before I just run down and, you know.
Yeah, I'm not going to put out on the first date, okay? You know, I just met you, you know. This is, you know, I ain't that kind of Benjamin, you know? And so hopefully that develops well. Whenever guys get called up from NXT to the main roster, I'm excited and nervous at the same time. Excited for bigger opportunities for them, you know, more, of course, for them, it's more money, you know, it's more exposure, more money, more merch sales, et cetera, et cetera. But then I'm hesitant at how they'll be used because a lot of the guys did so well in NXT, and then somehow they just either don't connect with the main audience or they tweak the character and it doesn't connect for whatever reason. You know, I mean, one of the biggest, to me, biggest failure from NXT to main roster is Tyler Breeze. Tyler Breeze was, you know, he was, you know, top contender level there at NXT. You know, the character was huge. It was over well. And then he comes in and they kind of really didn't give him the fanfare that they would in NXT and all this. It just fell very flat, and he bounced around. And now he's in you know, with Breezango, and that's working okay for him. You know, they get their TV time and all that. But to me, that wasn't the way I envisioned Tyler being utilized at his best. So I'm hoping that, you know, Bobby Roode connects the way they feel they want him to on the main roster. And can do as solid work as he was doing on NXT. I mean, he was doing fantastic stuff with the build towards his matches. His matches are very WWE style, very slower, you know, slower paced, older style heel. You know, he's heavy talking, and then he gets in there and he kind of chicken shits a little bit, but then he kind of sneaks and connives his way into taking control of the match, slowing it down, you know, making you fight his kind of fight. And then, the babyface has to kind of pop in their higher, faster spots around him. So I hopefully that can transition into usage on the main roster.
Bobby is that hybrid, that old school throwback that's still new school enough that will, I think, bring a lot of traditionalists back to the table, people who like the wrestling aspect or the wrestling aspect of WWE and miss it. And still you have the newer fans who want that entertainment with his sing-along entrance and the flash and what have you, that'll keep them paying money and coming to shows and butts in seats because his energy and the pomp and circumstance around him bring that genre of folks to the table as well. So I am not too worried about Bobby Roode, the same way I was worried about Aries on like the main roster.
Yeah.
Aries and Bobby Roode, both ultra talented guys, but Bobby Roode just has this, there's something Bobby's more about Roode.
He's been able to connect better, I think. That's the biggest thing with Roode. I think, honestly, it's a large part of it is the song. People like the Glorious. It's fun. It's entertaining. You know, I mean, that's part of it. But I think he just connects better than Aries ever did. I mean, I like Aries, but he's never been one of my favorites. And I think that's it because he just felt kind of bland a lot of times, you know, even in his indie runs, you know, he had the kind of the two versions of himself in ROH. The first version, he was, you know, super hard, technical, you know, I didn't really get into his stuff too much because it was just so bland. And then he kind of tried to do the overly colorful, you know, 70s, 80s wrestling, superstar Billy Graham-ish, you know, kind of big talker. And then he doesn't get in there and really fight, you know, like it helped add personality to him, but it didn't really make him that much more enjoyable to me. And I think a lot of people had that issue with him. You know, he just kind of falls flat. And so I think where Bobby may not be as technically proficient or athletic be at times, I think he connects better. He has a better way of working the crowd into his matches and stuff than Aries does. And I think hopefully that plays into more success for Bobby Roode. Now, the ending of NXT TakeOver, supposedly the ending was also played out the way it was in order to be kind of an exit for Roode. So Bobby Roode and Drew McIntyre have their match. You know, Drew's celebrating. Bobby Roode is the hell out of there, okay? Like, after he gets pinned, like, you don't see him walk to the back. You pretty much, he's just gone. And so then they bring in the new group, you know, to debut. And, having already seen part of them earlier in the night, apparently that was also, they did that then so that people forget about Bobby and they're not going, okay, well, are Bobby and Drew going to have a rematch? Are they going to have the series and bounce the title back and forth, etc.? So we saw Red Dragon earlier in the night. You know, they were not called Red Dragon, but when they did Dragon, it was called
Chasing the Dragon.
Yeah, Chasing the Dragon, as Nigel called it. You know, after the tag match, and then they come out, you know, in their gear and t-shirts for whatever reason, you know, why not? And then they're in there, and everybody, like, even as Drew's celebrating, you could see like a group of people looking over towards a certain area in the arena, and I guess security was kind of blocking getting people to move out of the way so Cole would have a clear path to run in. You know, Adam Cole, baby, and they say that a few times, and you know, he lays him out with a super kick, and they kind of all walk to get, you know, stand over Drew afterwards. And then the WWE.com exclusive shows them walk up to the front, and he does the Adam Cole Bebe on the stage. Now, I did hear word that they're calling the group Future Shock, which, of course, the tag team name of Kyle O'Reilly and Adam Cole.
Oh, gosh.
Before they split, and then Red Dragon formed with Bobby.
Let's not forget that's also Drew McIntyre's DDT.
The Future Shock DDT. So that's true. That's true. So maybe they kind of play off that too. Maybe they kind of go into different stuff. Because I was wondering if they were even going to call them Red Dragon. But if they just give a name to the trio, then whenever Fish and O'Reilly fight as a team, they can just, you know, similar to Sanity, they're representing Future Shock or what have you. But as a Red Dragon fan, I was very excited to see them together. You know, especially after the great matches they had on NXT TV against Aleister Black, both of them were individually. And then now that they put them together and Cole's with them, it should be a lot of fun. And yet again, Bobby Roode leaves. It's no longer his NXT. You know, he's now trying to take over SmackDown, so you have to have a top bad guy, and Adam and Red Dragon come and fill that role?
Adam and Red Dragon. I mean, Adam Cole was the surprise of the night for me. Seeing O'Reilly, seeing Fish out there, seeing them together, you knew it had to happen. You, even though they had individual matches and they didn't keep them far apart, but far enough apart that you thought that perhaps with their signings being so spaced apart that we were going to have them do individual runs. But their tag team was just so dynamic. It worked for the two of them. You hoped that WWE would just say, you know what? Screw the name, whatever you can't call them. Let's put them together. Let's just go for it. Especially in NXT, because the tag team division in NXT seems to just be on fire, no pun intended. So, again, having Nigel call it Chasing the Dragon was pretty good. Nigel's been calling that move for years. It was natural. It flowed. Everything about that moment when they came out and jumped Sanity and jumped AOP was perfect. It was beautiful. Seeing them come at the end of the match, at the end of the night, and just kind of lay into Drew McIntyre was shocking. Adam Cole, we'd have rumors forever about Adam Cole being signed and what have you, and to finally have him there at NXT in a WWE ring was amazing. He looked good. Those super kicks were pretty right damn dead on the money, and the three of them look like your new faces that run this places, you know? That's what they were going for, and you know, mission accomplished, goal achieved. Again, you forget about Bobby Roode, you forget about anything except for wanting to see now what these gentlemen are going to do next.
Well, so I had heard that, you know, I think it was probably officially, unofficially announced. You know, you had said there were rumors for a long time of WWE wanting Adam Cole, etc. But it was earlier in the week that they announced that Adam Cole had been signed. And then on Friday or something, you know, there were rumors started coming out that he was flying to New York with the NXT crew. So my guess was that he was going to be the, you know, in the crowd waving guy, you know, like Drew McIntyre was last year. He's up, oh, here he is, he's back, and he just, you know, superstar Adam Cole, and he was, hey, you know, and he'd do something like this for the camera or whatever, you know, like, and that was it. So very surprised and very happy thrusting him into it that quickly instead of trying to do some draw him out thing. Very excited to see where they go with this, and what becomes of the group and the direction of the storyline. I mean, we're not going to figure that out for at least until next week, because this week's NXT will just be the undercard, so to speak, of TakeOver. I think there's a, you know, under 90 kilos mixed tag match in there. What is it? I was trying to figure it out, trying to make a funnier way, but I don't think it converts as well as the kilos. I was going to say like under 14 stone.
Oh, gosh.
Like a stone is like, you know, 16, 17 pounds or something like that. And under like 14 stones is like 198, 195, something like that. But I think that one needs a little more explaining. So I think the under 90 kilos, you know, UK belt works best. You know, I mean, unless Sheamus is coming for a shot or Killian Dane. Gosh. You know, they're going to bring back Bad News Barrett and have him go for the UK championship. You know, otherwise it's just, you know, 90 kilos pre-taped. It's not even live. So other big news, of course, out of TakeOver, the injury to Asuka. Collarbone broken, 6 to 8 weeks. No surgery needed, thankfully, but 6 to 8 weeks still. I'm hearing speculation that some of the fans think that it's not 100% legitimate based on her celebrating, based on her post-match promo, that she may not have actually broken her collarbone, that this may be a way to have her hold on the belt, not have to keep beating up the roster while they pull her apart, and then they can spotlight the rest of the women as they see to try to battle who gets the next shot, you know, who's trained better, who's changed up their game to who can pick apart the puzzle that is Asuka. And then, of course, you know, next week you have the first, what are they doing them in chunks of episodes, right? So it'll be like
they're doing episodes. So,
well, they're not doing like one episode a week, right? They're doing like four episodes on Monday or something, I thought.
Who knows?
Anyway, so you'll see the Mae Young Classic start. And so you'll have a lot more. I guess they pull Asuka away, so the focus is more on that group of women and the undercard of the women on NXT. You know, to see who can step up and be a top player, who can step up to take the challenge of Asuka. In itself is kind of a smart idea, but yet again, there's speculation. You know, I mean, they haven't said anything about taking the title off her, of stripping Asuka. So it seems this, whether it's legitimate or not, this is a way to have Asuka step aside to give the spotlight to the other women.
I personally think it is a work, and my thought was it's a work to bring her up to the main roster. At least that was my hope. Nobody beats Asuka. She leaves NXT, the most dominant champion in creation, and she goes to SmackDown Live and, you know, captures that belt and brings it the prestige that Natalya, who's now the belt holder, says that she's going to bring to the title, which is, it's cute and all, but sorry, Natty, you've had your time. This should be Asuka's main eventing SmackDown Lives for here and into the foreseeable future.
Well, why can't Asuka go over to Raw and of Yellow Man's favorite, little Alexa Bliss, and send her packing, you know, so we don't have to hear him gloat about how wonderful and how she's God's gift to pro wrestling, etc.
Oh my gosh, are you trying to get heat, man? Stop it. man is dying from like measles, and this is how you treat him?
I know, it's SARS, it's come back. People thought it was gone, but it's come back, and you know.
Oh my gosh. So the mad cow that Patrick is, you know, dying from will not allow Asuka to kill Alexa Bliss. That's just wrong.
Again, he would like sacrifice himself to West Nile virus so that Alexa Bliss can survive and not get broken by Asuka. We get that now.
Yeah, see, if this was Game of Thrones, he would totally throw himself in front of a White Walker for her. So anyway, Asuka would be a better fit for me on SmackDown, but this injury is, in my opinion, a work, and it's a work that perhaps they plan because, again, you want this Mae Young Classic. I think the WWE feels that it is not going to do as well as the other specials that they had, the UK, the Cruiserweight. So they want to bring as much focus and attention to it and not have anything be distracting from it. The women in this tournament. Asuka being champion would automatically have people going, okay, because she beat Asuka. Okay, because she beat Asuka. Or, you know, have people kind of just Asuka, 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 when the focus should be these ladies in the ring, these ladies in the ring, these ladies in the ring. So while Asuka is a dominant champion, you need her domination to be backed off, and what better way than a injury? Maybe she is hurt, but maybe it's not the injury that we're being told that she has. And maybe this is, again, you have Ember Moon, who, you know, could really go against all these ladies and have this whole NXT division kind of just sucking up to be at her beck and call or fight her and set their game up at the same time. So I'm not she worried about now playing.
Try almost like fights to defend her number one contendership, prove that she deserves another shot. The biggest shock to me out of the match at TakeOver was Asuka kicking up from the Eclipse 100% clean. And I mean 100% clean as there was no delay between when the move was hit and the cover was done. It was literally boom, move, roll you over, one, two, she kicks up. There was no, I hit the move, I'm giving you a delay second, you know? Oh, I'm throwing my foot on the ropes, or I'm rolling to the outside, so it takes extra time for you to roll me back in, you know, and then I kick up, which was my just kind of my thought is that she would take it and be there by the ropes or something, or right. roll to the outside and all this, so that she wouldn't just, you know, oh, nope, no matter your strongest move, still can't beat me. You know, I mean, the match itself was good. I think I still feel that Ember's having a little bit of difficulty just connecting. So maybe with Asuka off to the side, it gives Ember more of that connection. Because you could hear when the, you know, when they were announcing the names, there was still a mixed reaction for Ember. There were quite a lot of people like booing her because they wanted Asuka to continue being dominant. And then even when Asuka got announced, you still kind of had this mix. There was still some people who wanted her, you know, oh, she's had it too long, take it off or move her. Move her up to the main roster. And other people saying, no, keep her down here, let her keep kicking butt. So maybe they're trying to sway that in the favor so that whomever does beat Asuka, they get the full positive reaction they want instead of this half mix, some people being, you know, half the crowd being pissed that she lost, or the half being happy, you know, for the new champion. Maybe this is kind of a longer scheme, longer term thing in that as well. So we do have the Mae Young Classic. We don't know, you know, between the two of us at least, we don't know if it's going to be released in several. I had heard at one time that they were going to do, like, you know, the first four episodes basically kind of on the network, like they do of Netflix series, where they just kind of release a bulk of things at once. Or whether we're going to get kind of the one episode per week at a time, like we do with the Cruiserweight Classic. But so that, you know, we've heard about it for, you know, several weeks now. People trying to keep the people who were there trying to keep their lips shut. Thankfully, that's been a pretty good thing. People not wanting to spoil it for everybody else. So I'm very excited to see that that footage finally reach the light of day. See some of the girls that we've known and come to see on the indie scene and international scene get a lot more exposure. They did the bracketology after SummerSlam, kind of introducing you to at least some of the girls a little bit, so you know a better idea, as opposed to them just walking in the ring and doing a taunt or a bow and then leaving. Our friend Kennedy was highlighted as well.
Jessica Carr, her new name.
As you know, Lady Ref Jess, I think is the Twitter handle now. It's WWF Girl Ref Jess or Lady Ref Jess or something. But yeah, she's under her real name. Ish. Yeah, not exactly her real name, but, you know. I mean, Drake went by his real name. You think that she would have just gone by hers, but maybe they didn't like that either. They wanted to copyright it.
Exactly.
Yeah. If they're going to have her kind of be more of a character, almost, at least because she is, because she is different. She's the, you know, I don't know if they've ever if they've had a lady referee in WWE, like, I don't recall any, but that doesn't mean there hasn't ever been one. You know, she just might be the first. There has? Okay. So Jess might just be, like, the first full time?
That's exactly what... Hey, look at you. That is exactly what her bio now says, that she's the first full-time okay. female referee.
So they've had some do appearances here and there, maybe at house shows, maybe at live events. So she's... You know, and eventually they may just shave that full time down to, you know, first ever if they want
to.
They do, you know. But, you know, happy for everybody involved to get to see them have the spotlight. And I'm anxious to see some of those matchups, man. Some of those matchups, you know, from what I've heard and just from looking at them on paper, a lot of them look really, really good. Now, as well as the release of the Mae Young Classic episode or episodes on Monday, we will get here in Atlanta the episode of Roar, Women's Wrestling of Atlanta, the physical and literal sister promotion of Atlanta Wrestling Entertainment. will be doing a big show. This is only their second official Roar show. You know, all Roar. I think there'll be one, you know, one match, that one men's match, I think, is kind of similar to how there's typically, or there had been for a long time, one Roar match per AWE show. I think the theme is just going to kind of be reversed with the Roar. But so we have, you know, some of our core women's Roar group as of late with Isla Dawn and Kira Hogan, Priscilla Kelly, Camilla Kane, you know, some of basically right now, at least kind of the core regular group there, as well as, you know, the woman who was in the first ever Roar match, Nikki Knuckles, making her return. You have Ivelisse making a return, Leva Bates making her debut, Thunder Rosa making her debut. So we have, you know, the matchups have already been shown and set, which you can find at online at, you know, at the usual spots, AtlantaWrestlingEntertainment.com, Facebook, Twitter, etc. Thunder Rosa versus Lacey Lane from Florida. We'll have Leva Bates versus Priscilla Kelly. And which is, you know, a big spot for both ladies at Opera, the big venue. So hopefully we can pack it full of rowdy fans and give everybody a fun show and a good time. I'm very excited for this show, have been for several weeks. So hopefully whoever's listening can be there and join us.
It's going to be a fantastic show. This is a new dawning and a continued path in the right direction or for women's wrestling. And so this show on a Monday night with literally all these talented ladies from everywhere. Kira Hogan, who just recently signed with Impact Wrestling, be taking on Mickey Knuckles. That is going to be a hell of a match in itself. You're going to have, like you said, Thunder Rosa taking on Lacey Lane. You're going to have some hard-hitting girls here and some established veterans right in the middle of Atlanta, right in the beautiful Opera nightclub, literally throwing down. So, and tickets are a steal. If you're listening to this, you need to come out Monday. I guarantee you will have the best time you've ever had at a show. These ladies are lovely, but more so than anything, they kick ass. So if you're looking forward to the Mae Young Classic, if you like watching women's wrestling, divas, knockouts, whatever you call them, Monday night, August 28th, Opera Night Club, come out to see the ladies of Roar.
Yeah, like I said, I've been looking forward to this since the idea was proposed, since I heard it first announced that they were going to be putting Roar to the forefront, giving it its individual, you know, trying individual shows for it again instead of just one or two matches per show. Very, very excited. Happy to see Ivelisse back. Her against Isla Dawn should be fantastic because they're both wonderful strikers. And I think Evie is, of course, more well-known, but I think Isla Dawn is, there's still a lot with her that is unknown. There's still a lot that fans haven't seen from Isla. I think she's still kind of yet to be untested in front of the Atlanta crowd to her fullest. So I'm excited to see what she can do, excited to see how she performs. Camilla will be there, who's
a beast. She is a monster. She's a beast,
and I like her. And the more I see her interactions on social media and all that, the more I kind of want to be her friend. You know, so
you should be.
It's one of those. It's kind of like with you know, now the Lady Ref Jess, scared and intrigued all at the same time. Because you're like, dude, Kennedy seems like a cool chick. Like, we should, you know, like, she's fun to talk to. We should totally hang out. But at the same time, I don't want her to murder me. You know? it's kind of like an allure and a dangerous, violent element, you know?
I get that. I get that a lot.
Yeah, like, personally? Like, you have guys saying that about you? Yeah. About how they're afraid you're going to pick them up and body slam them or power bomb or some shit if they smart enough.
Pile driver. I'm just pile driving dudes at like random.
Wow, so, yeah. That's nice. That's good. At least you have a signature maneuver. That's the most important thing. It doesn't matter if you can headlock or a collar and elbow. As long as you got your signature and finisher, you'll be good in this. You'll go places, kid. So that's what's going on this week. Got a lot, as we said, a lot of fantastic women's wrestling exposure. Not just with the board, Mae Young Classic and. Exciting to see what happens with NXT and the roster shakeups on Raw and SmackDown. But let's pull back a few weeks to the Scenic City Invitational Fan Fest. We have a Q&A, yet unreleased Q&A featuring Gunnar Miller and Corey Hollis that was recorded at the Scenic City Invitational Fan Fest. Let's go ahead and listen to that right now.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we're going to turn things over to last year's Scenic City Invitational Champion, Gunnar Miller, and Corey Hollis.
Hey, Scat Rags.
That's right. So what we doing?
You know what? This is just a wrestler forum, and it just whatever comes up, comes up. I've been talking too much, so I really hope some of you guys will have some questions. I do want to ask some questions to these characters right here.
Right.
Corey was had a podcast this morning with Kick Out at 2, and I caught not all of it, but I caught the majority of that this morning. And they came back to answer some questions in the forum, and then we're going to have Tanks on deck. He's coming up at 1:00, and he's promised it's going to be a shoot. He's going to reveal some stuff he's never revealed before, but I want to get started with Gunnar here, and I want to ask him a couple of questions. The match last night, and we just discussed this briefly, you and I did. I loved that match because I think every card needs, I told you, every card needs a good Haas match that is constructed well. Not just two big guys fighting, but a good match. A great match, a match that's been put together properly that gets the crowd invested with two big guys. And I just feel like Shane Marks is really good. I just love him when I see him wrestle. I've seen him wrestle a number of times live. How did you feel about that match last night?
I thought it was exactly what we needed it to be for last night, you know, considering the other matches that were on the card.
Hell of an agent.
You know, the guy that was helping us put together, I don't know who it was, but he did a
hell
great
of an
job.
Agent. Next Michael Hayes, guys.
I had been in the ring with Shane one other time about a year ago, so it was good to get back in the ring with him, you know, a year later, and kind of see how I progressed and be able to work with him a little bit. And we just didn't try to do too much, tried to make everything that we did mean something, and I think we was able to do that.
I'm gonna go where maybe I shouldn't go, but I'm going there anyway. Last year you had a match in the first round, which was not your best match, in my opinion.
I think it's everybody's opinion.
For whatever reason, it didn't gel, it didn't work out. And I thought you were phenomenal in the second round last year, and the work and that you had to put in, and a lot of folks had to put in to book that properly and get you to where you belong as the champion of that tournament. Because that first round match was not what it should have been or could have been, it made your job that much tougher last year, I feel like.
I'd say it put a lot of pressure on me going into the second round, which, with a football background, I'm used to pressure.
Right.
I usually perform better when under pressure.
Right.
Might have went into the first round, I wouldn't say too cocky last year, but really kind of confident with kind of what I've been doing. From the year before that, me and Judas, we just had two matches, 3 weeks prior to that. So I was like, "This is gonna be a good first round."
And they were
match.
Pretty good because I saw that. I saw at least one of them. I saw, but for some reason, it didn't gel at that time. Last night to me was total vindication for you. That match was great. I loved it. I loved a Haas match that's properly put together.
It was put together by a big body guy,
by a genius, I'm told.
Put together by a real big body guy, too.
Yeah. But I was so happy for that because you're such a deserving guy. You work so hard. Your family is such a great family. I love your mom and dad. I love your whole family. And you and I are mocks.
That's right.
So we have that in common from way back. I've told people, they know, back when I started at UTC, I was a good friend with Paz Wadley, mm-hmm. who was at UTC the same time I was. And I have a long history there with the athletic program. And of course, you were such a great football player there. So we've always had that bond, but I was so excited about your performance last night. It was such a great vindication, and you're moving forward today, and brother, you're right in the thick of things. I do not know the booking. I don't know what's going to happen today, but you're right in there for another championship. In my mind, I just don't know what's going to happen, so kudos to what you did. Amazing. Last night, and you're on the rise. You got the prototypical WWE body to me.
Thanks, I appreciate that.
And your future's unlimited. I told you, and I think Dylan and some other people you've talked to have said. I've talked to I've talked to your agents. We need to get you around the country. More people need to know who Gunnar Miller is. You are dominant in Georgia. You're dominant in the areas that you work. I want to see you work in New York. I want to see you work in Chicago. I want to see you work in St. Louis, Gabby. I want to talk to Big Mike about Big Mike Elgin about Gunnar coming to St. Louis, because I think they'd love him there.
Gunnar Elgin there sounds pretty hot.
Oh, Gunnar Elgin sounds so sweet to me. Just amazing what you've been able to accomplish. And I feel like you're still young in the industry and still learning. But my goodness, what I saw last night just really excited me. So, you know, thank you so much for your hard work and what you've done. And I'm going to use what few contacts I have. I know maybe three or four people. I'm going to talk to some people and say, let's get Gunnar over there. Let's get him to Chicago. Let's get him to St. Louis. Let's move him out of the bubble and move him up where he needs to be, because really good stuff and tremendous work by Shane Marks last night. Just both two guys working is what makes a great match.
It definitely takes two.
One guy working does not make a great match.
All in the ring too.
Yep. I love it. Beautiful. Beautiful.
Just saying, man.
Nobody's hiding under the ring like they did at the Scenic City Rumble.
Hey, man, strategy. I don't like getting hit.
But
he wasn't hiding. He was strategizing.
That's what it was. Anyone else have a question? Please, I've talked too much. Talk to Gunnar for me.
Oh, I was going
to
ask.
You can talk to Corey.
I was going to ask Corey a question. What's Braun Strowman like?
Really cool. You know, he's just a country boy. You know, big old country boy. That's why everybody calls him Big Country. He's really cool, though. I made the most money with him, and the paycheck was really, really nice.
Yes.
I actually got a serious question for Corey.
Yeah.
You're type 1 diabetic.
Yes.
How do you balance that? How do you manage it? I'm actually type 1 myself.
Oh, okay.
Pretty inspirational, actually, because you get your shit done.
I mean, I never let it hinder me. It was something that I was diagnosed with at the age of 14. Okay. So I don't know necessarily how long I had it before I was diagnosed. There was a doctor that told me, because I was wrestling in high school too, and a doctor told me I would never be able to do what I'm doing. If I could find that doctor now, I would send him an 8x10 and a t-shirt and, you know, and just say, look, I'd never let it hinder me in telling me that I can't do something. From my knowledge, and I don't know if it's true, but I want to say I'm the first type 1 diabetic to consistently work for WWE, which is a really cool honor. I know Kyle O'Reilly just signed, and that's really cool. I mean, I never let it hinder me in that way, and I never let diabetes have me. I always had the diabetes, if that made sense. It sometimes can be really tough, though, especially when I'm gone from home for, like, weeks on end, or I'm gone for, like, you know, four straight days or something like that. It can get tough, but also at the same time, too, when it's go time, I've never had an incident in a match where it's, you know, affected my performance, really. It's just luckily, by the grace of God, you know, I've had a really good support system growing up to where I knew I had to take care of myself or I wouldn't be able to do what I'm doing. So.
I got one for Gunnar. With your background in football and obviously, I mean, your genetics are just, you know, above, way above me. How was it to make the transition into wrestling? I'm sure you've had to answer this question a billion times, but I want to hear it. And trying to understand when to do something, why I'm doing it, not just about the bumps and all that stuff, but more about actually understanding why I'm going from A to B to C to D in a match.
Right. As far as the movements and stuff, it kind of came a little natural, more natural so than other sports have came to me in the past. But the biggest thing is psychology. I'm still learning. I'm always going to be learning. Guys like Corey, guys like Josh, guys like Tank, guys like Sean Tempers, those are the guys that really helped me out, especially when I first got started. They were with me almost, you know, every weekend when I was wrestling, you know, the first year. And I was able to learn a lot from them, probably faster than most people could, just because I'm around really good people a lot. Empire Wrestling was, it really helped me out. And then when I started traveling, I got to get with Jeff G. Bailey, and he's been around the business for a long time, and he's been able to help me out as far as like, hey, you know, the match was okay, but you need to do this here, and why. He explains things. And probably the biggest thing is my dad comes with me to every match I go to, and he records every match.
Hey, does your dad drive?
He does.
Cool. So I like that.
I'll drive home because his scene's not that great at night.
Okay, that's fine. As long as I don't have to drive.
Mine's good. Mine's good.
But he'll record every match, and then we'll study it as soon as it's over, you know, and I'll get it to the guys that I trust, and they'll tell me some feedback and try to improve by the next week.
Just like watching game film, in a way.
Just like watching game film, because I don't really get a chance to get in the ring, you know, a couple times a week to practice. My practice is match to match. It's the only chance I get to get better.
Yeah, because not like performance center. Just, right. Yeah, you know, makes perfect sense.
Yep.
Appreciate it.
More questions, guys. You got 9 minutes.
How about Corey? I mean, your heel work. I mean, you're pretty damn good at
Thank
it.
Thank you.
Yeah, he is.
Being a shorter guy, no offense.
I live 7'2", man. Yeah. I don't know what you're talking about.
Do you just really got to pull into the Hindi heel tricks just to get the heat because of I mean, you're a good baby face, but I like you much better as a heel. I like that chicken shit.
The thing about it, though, is because there's no heels anymore. That's why it's so easy for me. Everybody's too afraid of how many T-shirts they're going to sell. To me, that's not – I mean, it's important, but it's not 100% why I'm doing what I'm doing. Because I was saying this morning with the big house that we had – Yeah, it was huge. Better than Mania, almost. that everybody's, in a way, the same wrestler now. Everybody wants to do the same stuff. 80 million leg slaps, 80 million flips. No sell and no emotion in with what they do. And for me as a heel, why would I do anything really impressive to give you any reason to cheer me? Because if I do that, I'm doing my job wrong and making you like me. And I don't need to be doing that. You know what I mean?
Right.
So as a heel, I love it. It's easy because in a way, that's naturally who I am because I hate everybody. And
we hate you too.
Yeah, thanks. You know, but like, that's just, it's just, it's always been fun because there's not really that anymore. And that's really sad to say, but there's really not good, true heels that will go and say, hey, yeah, I punched your mom. I'll punch your grandma, too, and I'll do it again.
That's right, knock her teeth out.
Yeah, there's nobody that does that anymore.
Thank you for saying one thing today because you touched on something that pisses me off. I'm sick and tired of people no-selling 5 Germans in a row. Next time I go to a match and somebody gets tossed on 5 Germans and there's no-sell 5 times in a row,
it's not just
I might get in the ring, you know, because that's BS.
When did a punch not hurt?
Right. Guys, it's wrestling. It's performance art.
I said it this morning. Everybody's in this whole world where everybody thinks the fans control the match. In a weird way, you're coming to our theme park. You're jumping on our ride. We're supposed to take you through those emotions.
Yeah, you're supposed to make us happy, make us sad.
Exactly.
Us
but also at the same time, too, there is a lot of places where fans want to be a part of the show. There's a right time and a right place to do that, but it's not every single match.
Well, not only that, the action has to be controlled by the wrestlers and what's happening in the ring.
Yeah.
Hell, I love to get in the action, but I'm subordinate to what is happening.
Yeah.
It's about the wrestlers. It's about the performance, the booking, the ring, the characters. Now, if they want to draw me into a little bit, that's cool. If they don't, that's cool too. But it's not freaking about me or any fan.
Well, I can ask every single person in this room what drew them to professional wrestling, and not one of them is going to tell me a certain move.
That's exactly right. It's how it makes you feel.
It was the emotion of it was the emotion of a match, the drama in a match.
That's bullshit. It was the mandible claw. Not really that. It was the Baron Von Rash.
But he did the pose before it. But the thing is, too, is, you know, nobody, you know, knows what we're doing really, truly feels like, you know? And when guys go out there and they do whatever it is, five Germans or freaking 10 punches and then a big fire-up thing, it's why? When you could have done something else and got a much bigger emotional reaction. If you're not emotionally invested into the reaction, because this, boo, I hate you, go die, or whatever it is, rather than, oh, yeah. What lasts longer? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Natural reaction.
Exactly. And there's not a lot of that anymore.
What do you think about tongue-in-cheek heels?
Yeah, just...
Like, look, I'm healing, but I'm not really a heel. I don't know.
They don't know who they are yet. Yeah. They haven't found out what they are and what they're... goal in a match is, so that's pretty much basically it. And the thing is too is everybody wants to be, like I said, a tough guy now. There's nobody that wants to put the brakes or backpedal anymore. You know, there's nobody that does that. Everybody's the same, and I hate to say that because I love wrestling like with everything in me, but it's so weird, just, you know, in such a short time how things are changing. And I hopefully, you know, in certain companies, in certain ways, you know, they do get back to that old school way. I think NXT is doing a great job with that.
Yeah.
A lot of the program, I know a lot of people crap on it, but like how WWE is, they're doing the exact same thing. You know, I think Roman, I know a lot of people say negative things about Roman, but every single person, when his music hits, they stand on their feet. And that's what I'm looking for. Because... he's getting a reaction. They're not popping or reacting to his moves necessarily. They're reacting to the guy. Well, no pun intended, but you know, but that, if that helps, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I was saying earlier too, when WWE comes to town, it's not Hulk Hogan coming to town or Stone Cold coming to town. It's WWE's coming to town. It's the brand that sells.
Yeah.
You know, and if you look in the audience, it's, you know, families. It's not really anymore a bunch of friends going college buddies from like Nitro and Raw in the 90s, you know, going out to get drunk and have a good time.
Especially at the house shows there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like really a ton of kids at the house shows.
Yeah, and that's also think about it too, because I'm sure everyone in here was a fan when they were a kid, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know? And you were drawn into something from a moment. Go into a show, whatever it is. And I always heard the advice that Undertaker used to give guys was, you're out there working and for that 8-year-old kid that's there to see wrestling for the very first time. You know what I mean? Because, you know, if we're trying to please everyone else, we're not doing it the right way, if that makes sense. So.
All right. I'm fixing to run these boys out of here, these young fellas, because I got a guy that's coming up here at 1:00.
I ain't scared of him.
He's going to sit right here.
He's retired.
I'm bigger than him.
He's got nothing to lose. You've wrestled Braun, right?
Yeah. What is he going to do?
Yeah. So
I did have one last question.
One last question.
Gunner, for you, so you're Mystic City. This is your town, hometown. Your feelings on just what the SCI has become and that whole thing. We've got people from all over the world really coming to your town, to Chattanooga, Tennessee, for this 2-day, now 3-day event. You know, before we know it, it'll be like a 5-day event. It'll be new WrestleMania. So your thoughts just in the overall SCI and the reception that, you know, how everybody's taking it.
Well, first, before he answers that, he lives here, right? But he doesn't know the roads at all.
Okay, first of all,
he doesn't know the roads. We literally took a 20-minute back way instead of going 5 minutes down the road.
Listen, to get Mr. somewhere City today. Does not take somebody on the non-scenic route.
There was no scenic. There was no scenic. I saw gravel and cones.
But I think that it's grown tremendously. The first year we had it is at Empire, you know, a smaller venue, more of a local crowd, I guess, more local wrestlers as well. But then, you know, last year we saw it grow quite a bit and was able to, you know, partner up with the Hamilton County School Board. And, you know, we've got East Hamilton, and I believe now we have Hickson, and we have Ottawa, and we have Soddy Daisy. So that's a big partnership to have like a road to the scenic city in a sense. And I do think this thing is going to grow. I think the crowd will be a lot better tonight, just like it was last year on the second night. I think the last night was better than it was last year on Friday night. So this thing's going to be pretty cool to see it grow, and especially in Chattanooga when, I guess, indie wrestling in Chattanooga hasn't always had the greatest name. I think we're able to help that out.
Thank you guys for coming today.
And that was the Q&A with Gunnar Miller and Corey Hollis. So, Tamika, what do you think?
Absolutely amazing, the talent between those two. And it just, again, the Scenic City Invitational is one of those tournaments, those special atmospheres that you get to sit down and you get to talk kind of one-on-one with these guys and listen to them and just learn a lot about them and to watch them grow, and you see them later down the road. I know for a fact, will reflect back to these times and these conversations. It was great.
That is our show for this week. Please find us on all of our elements and tweet us, hit us up. Let us know what you think about the show. Find us at FOW on Facebook, on Twitter. You can find us on the Wrestling With Words audio network, as well as all the many other great podcasts and content, written and audio, that they have available. I am on Twitter at Danny F. in Danger. Tamika, the Scream Queen, is on Twitter at Mika Villis. Until next time.
We are everywhere.
We're everywhere.